You're about to listen to a talk given at the Center for Spiritual Living Midtown at the beautiful Academy of Medicine in Atlanta, Georgia. If you want more information on our center, please see our Facebook page or our website. Thanks for listening. I hope these words of wisdom make a positive difference in your life.
Trick. Now, it's always interesting to me that we don't really talk about what the talk's going to be about because I'm never quite sure until I get here. But Patrick always comes up with a song that's absolutely right on, and that was, in a lot of ways, you'll figure it out. Bear with me a little bit. In the last 5 days, I've been in Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee, and Mississippi, and I've been eating pollen all over the Southeast. So I'm going to wash it down a little bit. because we are beings who use the power of thought to decide where we focus our attention. We talk about that all the time. One way to think of ourselves is as decision machines. Now, some people go, oh, no, I'm a love machine, and that may be true, but we are also decision machines, okay? Now, it's fairly obvious that we are always making decisions. From the moment we wake up to the moment we go to bed, we decide when to get up, and we decide when to turn out the lights at night or turn off the TV. We decide what to eat for breakfast, where to go to lunch, and what to buy for dinner. We decide where we work, who we're going to spend our time with, and what we do with our money. Now, some of our decisions that we make on a daily basis don't make any difference at all, while other decisions we make can change the course of our entire life. During the course of a normal lifetime, most of us encounter at least some decisions that are really challenging for us, like quitting a job. That could be a very challenging decision. Or committing to a monogamous relationship. That could be. Or having a child or not having a child. Or moving to a different town or state. And the consequences of decisions like these touch so many different aspects of our life and our personality and our essence, our self-idea, that they sometimes feel overwhelming when we're trying to deal with them. Because, especially when we're making the decision, we can only guess at how things are really going to turn out in the end. That's what makes them so scary. But it's harder for some people to make these decisions than it is for others. Some people, as we all know, we all have them in our life, have a lot more trouble making decisions. There are people, for example, who experience this significant level of fear when they have to figure out what kind of car to buy, maybe, or choosing a new hairdresser or some big life decision like that. So the difficulty in decision-making, what this tells us, is not in the decision itself. The difficulty in decision-making is in the mind of the person making the decision. That's obvious for us. Now, this does not mean that some people are better or smarter than others. We all have our own personal comfort level when it comes to making decisions, no matter how decisive we consider ourselves to be. We all have a certain point where making a decision becomes intimidating or stressful. And usually it depends upon how much risk is involved and what we're dealing with, whether we're dealing with something very important to us, whether we're dealing with our money or our job or a relationship. And it also depends upon what is, in fact, at risk. Sometimes it's our ego, sometimes it's fear of being rejected, or sometimes it's the amount of time that we have invested in someone or something that we may lose or feel like we've wasted. So we all handle certain areas of our life better than others, and it's different for each one of us. For example, some people, I have several friends, have no trouble at all spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on an investment. No problem, I'll write a check, but they can't decide whether or not they'll ask a certain person out to dinner because they're afraid they'll get, you know, turned down, whatever. Well, somebody else will ask anybody, hey, he or she looks cute, I'll go ask them out, but they're afraid to spend money on anything because they might lose it. It goes both ways. Now, usually it's the big decisions that make people nervous, and that's understandable, okay? If we have to decide whether to make a drastic change in the entire direction of our life, we've probably got a lot of different issues at stake. This morning, though, I'm not going to talk about the specific decisions in all those areas. We talk, different talks, David and I, about money. We talk about prosperity. We talk about different work, creativity, all that stuff. But today I want to talk about one extremely critical element that sometimes gets overlooked in metaphysical teachings like these. One critical element in the process of making all decisions, no matter what they happen to be. I'm going to talk today about why some decisions seem more difficult and what we can do about it. Now, first, I want to lay a little groundwork. Give me a couple minutes here. Let's state a very obvious point and make sure that we all agree on it. It's one of those statements that everyone knows is true, but they don't always act in their life as if they believe it's true. And here's the statement. We cannot avoid making decisions. Everybody agree with that? Okay, sounds like a given, okay? In fact, the power of choice, the power of making decisions, is really the only power that we have. Not so much the power to choose every single thing that happens to us or around us, though we have a lot more choice over that than some people realize. I'm talking about the power we have to choose how we respond to life. How we respond to what happens around us. We always have choices about how we respond to the world, how we react, how we perceive, and how we interact with any person, any place, or anything that we encounter. Now, the mandatory decision part, the part where you have to make a decision, comes in deciding which choice we either accept or reject. We can't avoid doing one or the other, even if we wanted to, because, as we've all heard time and time again, not making a decision is a decision, okay? Everybody with me on that? That's sort of a corollary to that other statement. Now, those people who are confronted with a decision, who simply bury their head in the sand, or they run away to another state or a town to avoid having to make a decision, or they just close their eyes and go, la, 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 I don't even want to think about it, they're actually making the decision, excuse me, to let someone else or something else decide how their life is going to be lived. So the number one rule of the game is everybody plays. We all have to make decisions. That's the way life works. Now, another thing I've noticed is that very few people think of themselves as being indecisive. How many of you in here think you're indecisive? Very few. One or two? Good. Thank you, David, for being so honest. We really appreciate that, okay? People think of themselves as being careful, maybe, or cautious, or deliberate. I love that one. Or thoughtful, but indecisive, not so much. All of us like to think that when we have a situation to face in our life, we collect all of the information available, we sort it into the pros and the cons, the pluses and the minuses, the good and the not so good. We set bias and emotion aside. We listen carefully to our intuition. This is how all you guys do this, right? Okay, I do too. Okay. And then we make the best decision that could be made under the circumstances. I mean, that's what we always think we do. The funny thing is, as I got into the phase of being in this teaching where I was honest with myself, which I really hated, that was the worst part, being honest with myself. If that actually is how I always make decisions, then why is it, I ask myself, as I look back at my life, why is it that so many of those rational, well thought out, logical decisions that I made in years past got me into holes so deep that it took me months or years to dig myself out? Why is it, okay? In fact, more times than I would like to admit, I could just as easily have flipped a coin and had just as good a chance of making a decision that would have worked out well in the long run, if not better. But at the time, considering the event that I was trying to work out in my mind and my life that was very important to me, whether it was getting married or getting divorced, or getting married again, getting divorced again, you know how that works anyway, or going into the military or getting out of the military, those are two big decisions for me, moving to Atlanta or considering leaving Atlanta, which I've had to consider a few times, or whatever it was, the idea of flipping a coin to make a decision would have seemed not only ridiculous, I would have been insulted. These are important decisions. What do you mean, flip a coin? Okay, these things require serious thought. Not only that, each decision I was making had so many variables that at the time, with my logical, rational, and very rigid way of thinking, the only way I could possibly imagine handling it was by trying to control the outcome. Does this sound familiar to anybody? Trying to control the outcome. And I did that by trying to control every single little detail, every single factor of timing and stress and location and everything else that was going on. In other words, I believe that in order to create the best decision, I had to handle every single bit of it myself. The scary part was, I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know how to do it. I didn't even know exactly what I wanted to happen in the long run. I mean, I had some vague notion of what might be a good solution, but I had no clear idea what would be a perfect final result. But I kept on trying. I kept on pushing and pulling and forcing and controlling and getting angry when things didn't go the way I thought they were supposed to go and getting frustrated until I was physically and emotionally drained. Happened a number of times. But meanwhile, and this was interesting to me in retrospect, the situation that I was dealing with, once I got exhausted while I was doing all my piddly external stuff over here, it worked itself out in a way that was actually pretty good for everyone concerned, including me. And interestingly enough, most of the time it worked itself out in a way that I would never have thought possible. Somebody showed up like Patrick's song that I didn't even know, or something happened that was not even in my wheelhouse. You see, even in the middle of whatever particular mess I was in, I never realized that, in effect, what I was doing was flipping a coin to make my decision. Now, I wasn't standing on a 50-yard line with everybody there and calling heads and tails, but the result was the same, and let me explain that. This is the point of my talk today. Now, borrowing something from one of the spiritual gurus that I admire greatly, Reverend David Barrett, I have here a prop. Okay? But this is not just any prop. This is a top-of-the-line, premium, decision-making tool. Okay? And if anybody has a big decision to make this week, see me afterwards. I will rent it to you. Okay? All right. It is a coin I got way before I was in this teaching. I don't know where I got it. On one side, it's got a little child digging with a little angel there next to him. That's the head spot. And on the other side, it says, God may give you the seeds, but you have to plant them. So, kind of cute, okay? Anyway, I've had this for a while. Now, for any of you who may not gamble or watch professional sports, let me explain how this decision-making process works, okay? Now, this device has two sides. You with me so far? Okay, good. It's also got an edge, but the mathematical possibility of it landing there, though it is possible, is so remote that we're not going to consider it. The basic procedure involves throwing this decision-making device in the air and allowing it to land on one side or the other. That's how this thing works, okay? But there's something else we need to do first to make this process work. You see, each side of this coin is different, and what it looks like isn't really important. But what is important is that before we throw this into the air, we all agree upon two different sets of facts, beliefs, and personal preferences that we will apply one to each side. One set of ideas, one decision applied to each side. In other words, each side represents one specific solution or one specific action, so we will think of this as an either-or decision maker. For example, let's just make this interesting. It's always more fun when there's money on the line, isn't there? Okay? Let's say if it comes up heads, next month David and I will be replaced permanently on the platform by a Baptist minister who studied under Jerry Falwell. Okay? If it comes up tails, we will be replaced permanently, and I know you'll miss us, but anyway, by Deepak Chopra, who will be on the platform every single Sunday. Okay? Either or, pretty simple. So we toss this sucker up, we let it come down, and we look at which side it's showing, and that determines what's going to happen. Okay? Really simple. Everybody with me? Okay? Okay. For many years, this will keep a couple of you awake anyway, this is the way I tried to make decisions in my life. When I had a problem that needed to be faced, I took all the information I knew, all the ideas and the opinions that I had held for years, and all the experiences from my past, okay, and I divided them into two possible choices. Yes or no, stay or go, this or that, heads or tails. You see, when we flip a coin, we accept beforehand that there are only two possibilities and that they are mutually exclusive. We eliminate all the other options before we even get to what we think is the important part, the part where we look at which side of the coin came up. We know that we can never have a result that includes heads with a little bit of tails, or a result that's half tails and half heads, right? Can't have it. Doesn't exist. But we accept that premise up front, and by accepting it, here's the key, we limit our possibilities unnecessarily. Unnecessarily. What we don't understand is the most important part of any decision comes well before the final choice is made. The most important part of any decision comes when we decide at the very beginning to open ourselves up to any and all possibilities, including the ones that we can't see, that we can't, especially the ones that we don't know yet. You see, when we limit ourselves only to those things that we think are possible, we make it very difficult to go somewhere in life where we've never gone or to do something in life that we have never done. It's like that old T-shirt saying, you know, if you always think what you've always thought, you'll always get what you've always got. Okay? Everybody's seen that. When we flip a coin, we assume that there are only two choices. But this is an illusion that we set for ourselves. We create this for ourselves. And the most insidious part of that illusion is the subtle belief that some power outside of us, in this case, the coin, the premier decision-making tool, okay, is going to make the final choice. That's the illusion that we give. And if you think about it, that's the exact opposite of what Dr. Holmes taught, Dr. Ernest Holmes, who started this teaching. And if you've been in this teaching very long, you know what I'm saying. You see, as co-creators of God with our experience, not just some parts of it, our entire experience, which is what we believe we are, our role is not to dictate how we are going to get to where we're going to go. That is God's job. God's got a job. It's on a resume, okay? Our only responsibility is to create a very clear idea in our consciousness that there is an answer that benefits everyone involved, including us. And then to pay careful attention to our thoughts as they relate to whatever is going on around us. And then, once we do that, then we act upon what our increased awareness shows us. That's how we should be figuring out the best thing to do. And we do it this way because we trust that infinite intelligence will do what it does, which is to work through very basic spiritual laws to create an outcome that does in fact work better for everyone concerned. And we don't have to know beforehand how it's going to happen or what it's going to look like. In fact, if we do it right, there's a very great likelihood that the final result will be something that we could not possibly have anticipated. I've seen it happen many, many times, okay? That we could not have anticipated by using our linear, logical, oh-so-traditional way of thinking. But one thing we can be sure of is it's going to be an answer that works. It will be an answer that works. Now, we may not admit it, or we may not even realize it, but most of us actually do like to have our decisions made for us. It's true. We really, really do. Now, if I told that to some people, even a few of you years in here, you may deny it, but it is still true. Now, we don't like other people controlling our life. Anybody here like that? I certainly don't. Okay? Or forcing us to act a certain way. We insist upon maintaining our freedom of choice. But even with that, what we end up doing most of the time is arranging many of our decisions in a way that we don't have to make the final choice. We arrange our decisions so that the final choice gets made for us. We may say something like, you know, I threw some examples together. If I don't get promoted by this Christmas, I'm going to quit. I can't help it. The company forced me into it. If that person I've been dating and kind of like moves to New York, I'm going to break off the relationship because long-distance relationships never work. Okay? I'm going to quit drinking, but not until the pressure at work slacks off because that's the only way I can relax. You know? If this guy doesn't ask me to marry him, then I'll stay alone for the rest of my life because men or women my age only get so many chances. You know? Either this or this. You fill in your own example. If this does or doesn't happen, then I'm going to do that, okay? Now, it doesn't even have to be that big of a decision, okay? It could be something smaller. If he leaves the toilet seat up one more time, I'm going to, you know, that kind of thing, okay? if I don't have a certain amount of money saved by age 60, I won't be able to retire, and on and on. We take our beliefs and our opinions and our assumptions and the facts, quote unquote, as everybody knows them, and all of this stuff that we have accumulated through the years that got us to where we are now, and then we make our decision based on what happens out there. Out there. We set it up that way in what we call the real world, and what Dr. Holmes calls the world of effect. Okay? We delude ourselves into thinking that once we've got all the information collected and sorted and evaluated, all we have to do is sit back and see what the world tells us it wants us to do, and that'll tell us what direction to go. Now, if we do this, the decision that ends up being made is just as likely to be a good one as it would be if we simply flipped a coin, because we will have taken ourselves out of the most important part of the decision-making process, which is the spiritual part. The spiritual part of the decision-making process. You know, I don't know if you've noticed, but if we go around, go through life, waiting to see what the world wants us to do, we get jerked around a lot. Have you noticed that? Anybody? We do. That's simply because we are not using the inner wisdom, this inner power that we have to direct our life in the world in the direction we want to go. Now listen to what I'm saying here. Not necessarily the way we want the world to go, but the way we want to go in the world. It's a big, big difference. Now, here's one more thing to consider. Excuse me. When we flip a coin and we see it lying there, face up, we only see one side. Once again, painfully obvious, but true, okay? We don't think about the fact that the other side is only this far away. We accept without question the verdict of the side that's showing, the one thing that confronts us, the appearance that we see as the way things have to be, because that's all we can see. We may even think that God has to pick a side because that's what we do. We get so fixated on what we do know that we forget that there's an infinite range of possibilities that we don't know. We forget something that all the metaphysicians throughout history have told us, and that's that God probably has a better idea. What we forget is the oneness idea of this teaching. We forget that God is the coin, both sides of the coin, and the edge, and the place it lands, and the consciousness of the person who threw it up in the air. God is all of that, and the final decision that gets made. So God has no limits. Why do we try to impose limits on God? Another way to look at it, okay? The reason we need to break this habit of letting outside circumstances dictate our decisions is that when we do not make our decisions from within, from that sacred space, okay, we don't put any power, any real power, into the final result. We don't. We allow the outside world to handle it. We're simply allowing things to be done unto us and then try to respond to whatever is happening to us. And that results in our being in a place of constant mental and emotional uncertainty rather than a place of calm spiritual strength and inner peace, like Angela was talking about in her introduction. Now, so here's what we need to do. There's a few things we need to do. Then I'm going to give you a little homework to try when you go home. First of all, we need to stop being afraid of making mistakes or being afraid of taking responsibility for making bad decisions. That's the first thing we need to do. We're all going to make wrong decisions, and that's how we learn to make the right ones. Or as someone once said, I always love this, good decisions come from experience, and experience comes from bad decisions. Okay? It's a great statement. Very, very true. We also need to stop worrying about how things are going to turn out. Once we start consciously using this intelligence that's in us that just happens to be our own individual expression of the one perfect intelligence that we call God, we're going to make a lot more right decisions than wrong ones. Tied into that, we have to stop worrying about who we're upsetting, whether we're upsetting our parents or our kids or our friends. We have to stop worrying about going against some idea of right and wrong that we adopted years ago that we don't even know we have that no longer applies. We need to stop reacting to the world so much and to start being first cause to our experience. It's what we are. We ought to act that way. We need to look in here within our mind, within our heart, okay, within our divine center that Dr. Holmes talks about, to get a very clear idea about what kind of life we want. And then we need to build on that idea, hold it in consciousness, and know that the power that creates everything supports us completely in creating that life for us. Okay? Now, here's a little secret that I've learned. Little process. This is your homework part. And this is a way you can begin to reclaim your power of decision. If you have a big decision to make in your life right now, at whatever level, and you think you don't know the answer, here's what I want you to do, okay? When you go home today, find a nice, peaceful place and get quiet. We all know how to do that. Think about your choices and designate them heads or tails. Then get out a coin and flip it in the air, okay? And when it comes down, cover it without looking at it. What did I just say? Without looking at it, okay. And then go within and say to yourself, something in me knows all I need to know about this situation. Something in me knows what I want and how to get it. And for a few moments, still not looking, just listen to that still small voice within, because it might tell you whether it wants heads or tails, or it might even tell you to throw the coin away and follow your heart. And follow your heart. In either case, whatever that voice says, and it's your voice, pick up the coin, still without looking at it, and put it in your pocket because you don't need it anymore. The answer that comes to you when you are finally ready to accept it is going to be more valuable to you because it is your spiritual decision. And it will have behind it all of the courage, all of the clarity, all of the determination, all of the conviction, and all of the power that your consciousness contains. And that's what will make it work. That's what will make it work. And you don't need a silver dollar or anything else to justify your decision or tell you what to do. This is the truth in your life. And this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. All right. Thank you. Okay. Heads, I do a treatment. Tails, we go to brunch. No, we're going to. Okay. Both. There you go. Good. We're on the edge. All right. Just take a moment here. Take a breath. Get centered. And let's know that we live in a universe of infinite possibility. The world does not limit who we are or what we can do. Nothing outside of us limits the possibilities in our life. No choice in our life needs to be made any further than our own consciousness. As we begin to recognize this, we recognize that we do not make choices in a vacuum. We make choices here in the center of a great intelligence that surrounds us and fills us. So everything we need to know to do the best possible thing for ourselves, those we love, and for our life is available to us, immediately available. It is within the one consciousness that we share with all things. So as I recognize this, I begin to move forward in life, no longer afraid of which path I'm going to take, which fork in the road I'm going to walk down. I realize that there is always a third way, or a fourth, or a fifth, or a sixth, or more. I realize that what I know is such a small part of what is possible that I begin to spend more of my time being grateful for and open to what I don't know. I begin to open myself to people who I before ignored. I open myself to ideas that I paid no attention to. I open myself to doing things that I never would have dreamed that I could do. And as I do this, my life gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And as I move into the world, I no longer have two paths to walk. I have an infinite number of paths open to me, and I can go front, back, right, left, or even up or down. But for whatever path I choose, the one place I always go first is within. Within, to recognize this presence, to be grateful for it, and to follow it. So I'm going to take a few moments in silence right now for all of us. Excuse me. And in this moment, I want you to think about a decision that you have to make in your life. If you have no decisions, decide what you're going to have for dinner. Okay? And in this moment, as each obvious idea comes to you, smile and set it aside. And open yourself to an idea that is different from something you would have ever considered. And when that idea begins to show up, welcome it and embrace it. Let's take a few moments in silence. With gratitude for this awareness and recognizing its sacred significance in our life, we embrace this answer, we embrace this possibility, but we're not attached to it. We know that no matter what decision we make, the decision-making process is never over. It is constantly expanding and growing into greater and greater places, matching the way our consciousness grows. So knowing this, we give thanks for all we have been given and all we have yet to give. We give thanks for our place in this world, for our place in the one consciousness, and we release this awareness into the one mind, letting it do its good and perfect work. And so it is.